It's those two assholes, those two idiots you saw me talking to at the third rail.
Just he doesn't want to touch the third rail.
That's, you've hit the third rail for sure.
That is the third rail, saying white people have interest.
Third rail. The third rail here is another wonderful show on the TRS network.
It's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
It's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
Watch out for the third rail, baby. That's high voltage.
And the opinion of this reporter, if this nation or, in fact, the world ever needed heroes, that time is now. That time is now.
Take me faking my own death to avoid the COVID vaccine. This is happening. Episode 179 of the most handsomest and most catboy-hating podcast ever produced. Howdy, I'm your host, Bellerophon, resident mouth of the South. Let's introduce our panel today. We've got the man who presses G extra hard when he writes the word enlightenment, DK. Say hey, sir.
Namaste.
I really do enjoy the bit where you pretend to be an Indian. We should revive that.
Wait, pretend?
We pretend? I don't understand.
We're going to be talking about Indians today. I got news for you about Indians.
Oh no.
Well, just cover your ears during that part, DK. You know, we don't want to make you feel unwelcome.
He's very sensitive for my people, yes. Sorry. All right, that's enough on that. All right, let's continue.
And then next up on the mic, we've got the manlet who shouted gay nerd at the heart of the world, Borzoi. And that's a reference for you fags who read books.
Exactly four of my listeners got that, but the four of you who are familiar with Harlan Ellison's work, thank you for listening.
All right. And then lastly on the mics, we've got the man who failed art school on purpose just to become more based, Gingerzilla. Say hey, sir.
Hello.
All right. And then last but not least, we've got our resident grand wizard of audio, Frank.
Voodoo woo, I came to bring this to you.
What is that from? People have asked me about that, and I've told them I don't know exactly.
Voodoo woo.
Yeah, little known fact, that's not a drop. That's actually Frank. You know, that's just how he speaks.
As if my life couldn't get weirder than weirder now that I'm going to associate Ubu with that voice, because I already hear it daily from my wife. She picked up Ubu. She picked up Ubu from Twitter or something at some point and thought it was really cute and didn't know what the origin of that was.
Twitter and its consequences, man. Oh, all right. But collapse. Before we get into our topic.
Yeah, the collapse of my fucking personal life.
Yeah, before we break up any marriages, you know, for the cast members here, we do have a quick word from our sponsor this week. Are you tired of swinging your own chickens and flipping your own light switch on Shabbat? From the entrepreneurial minds that brought you Grubhub, sign up today for Goitoy. Our qualified and screened Gentiles can be ordered with a push of a button on our handy-dandy app for iPhone and Android, and they'll show up to your door within minutes to do the tasks that would anger Yahweh. You use code 109 for 5% off. Note, we no longer provide service to Little St. James Island.
It's good to have sponsors.
Man. Now, I thought that was good. I was waiting for the laugh.
I laughed at the first time I heard it. I legitimately laughed at the first time I heard it, but now I knew it was coming that time.
Oh, fair enough. We'll have to do live reacts for all of that. Anyway, yeah. I feel like my lowbrow dad jokes are going unappreciated. I'll storm off after the recording and join BLM. But anyways, you know, before I do that though, you know, just going in order of how I introduced you, you know, DK, give me a quick rundown of what you got for us today, brother.
So my winner is QAnon, or whatever, the Q movement, or whatever you want to call it. Coomer Waffen, yes. Excellent. My loser is Rod Dreher, and my topic, if we have time, is just I want to reflect on what it means to be a dissident and how that interfaces with things like impermanence and just generally the attitude that we should have as dissidents as we move forward.
All right. Sounds like there's a lot to dig in there. All right. Borzoi, Uwu, what you got for us?
So my winner is Minesweeper, not the game, but the Twitter bro. The loser is Matt Yiglius, and my topic is this Tablet Mag article.
Matt who? Sorry? Sorry, never mind. Yiglius.
Look, he's Jewish, so he doesn't get to have proper pronunciations of Greek names. Iglesias is supposed to be, I mean, at least
that's, it's from Iglesias, I think. Yeah, well, it's from Ecclesia, is the Greek word for church, and then that gets Hispanicized into Iglesia in this is a Spanish word for church.
He's a Jew. He doesn't get
any of the benefit of the doubt. Fair enough.
He doesn't get a proper Greek pronunciation of that. My topic is litmus tests online. Why is a private Facebook group for women expelling Jewish members? We found number 110, gentlemen.
Oh man, yeah, just digital countries. They're literally countries that don't even exist except on our laptops.
That's mine.
Awesome. And I think we had a little bit of mic trouble, but lastly, our special guest of the week, Gingerzilla, what you got for us to discuss today, man?
My winner and loser, I'll say, is probably both me. My loser, I'll say, because inside of 4 days, I published 4 books and they all got banned.
I shouldn't be laughing. It's just the brazen absurdity of it. I can't help but just of course.
It's unbelievable. And my sales were doing pretty good in those 4 days, so I'll pat myself on the back for that. And I guess that makes me the winner also, because I guess if you're over the target, that's when you take flack. So if I can't publish one fucking book without getting banned in like 2 days, then it's I must be doing something right, or pissing the right people off at least.
Well, I mean, you're the guest, so I say let's just get into that right now. Let's talk about your books. Let's talk about what happened. Let's talk about all that stuff.
Sounds good.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, I wanted to put a book out for a while. It was a lot of work because I started off making comics just for the web. And there's all kinds of formatting shit when you're going to do it for print. And I wanted to try to maybe get a little shekels out of my comics because they take up so much time. And everyone told me they wanted me to make a book. I tried doing t-shirts and all that stuff, but nobody wants to wear my remarkably edgy merchant jokes on their shirt. So
it might tend to paint a target on the front and on your back.
Yeah. So I endeavored to make a book. There's no question I would get banned. I kind of had that as in the forefront of my mind. And I talked to a couple people mentioned to me that I'd probably be able to get under the radar with Amazon for a little while because everything's so automated with them. And I tried with Lulu Publishing because I actually like their quality a lot better. They produce really high quality prints. And I got on their platform and almost to the hour, 2 days later, I got an email from them. They're like, yeah, no, everything about yours is like racist, so no. And then I had 2 books there. I had a paperback and a hardcover of my, it's just a compilation of like all my cringe from the past 3 years. And then I moved over to Amazon. Their quality of printing is a little lower, but they're more automated. So I figured maybe I could last a couple weeks on here. And as soon as I started, the sales started. People like it's kind of working in my favor a little bit because I'm having that that effect where people want to get it before it gets banned again. But it was less than 2 days on Amazon and I got banned. And actually, I got a bunch of pretty fun reviews from the people that were trying to get me banned, I think, on Amazon. It's anti-Semitic trash, blah, blah, blah. So it was interesting, and now I'm back on Amazon through means that are otherworldly, and also on Barnes & Noble, you can actually search for Gingerzilla on both of those. Ginger with a J, both J's, both G's are J's. And so it's still there, but it was quite, I actually thought I would last longer than 2 days on each platform. So it was a little, I guess, enlightening to realize how much of a target I have on my back because of this. Like, I thought I would be able to go under the radar a little bit, but not even a little. Like, it was amazing to me how fast they descended on what I was trying to do and took it away.
No, it is remarkable, right? How vigilant they are against just, I don't know, you know, a coffee table book, right? But I will say, to your point, you know, I've also had to make apologies for, you know, not lasting as long as I thought I would. So, you know, no judgment here.
I don't even bother with trying. I mean, like, I people probably know I'm working on a book right now for Antelope Hill, but before that, I didn't even bother with, because I've had experiences with like trying to set up a secret Patreon and the like, and they know who I am, and it's just that stuff just gone immediately. You have both the combination of the snitches that are remarkably, just remarkable with the amount of free time they have on their hands, but there's also they keep digital tabs on us, so they have a tendency to basically just, unless you are able to really, really find a way to get around them and lie low, they find your stuff and just ban it.
It's amazing how thorough they are, because, like, the thing they commonly say, one of the most common things that my comics get, especially when they find their way to Reddit, is I get, like, constant comments about, like, that I'm a neat, or that I'm an incel or whatever, and I'm like, nigga, I got a wife and two kids. Like, what are you doing following me around on the internet? Who's the one with no time? Like, who has all the time on their hands? like you're the, like, lurking against, like, you're the one following around a cartoonist with, like, a couple thousand fans. Like, what are you doing with your time?
Yeah, and I was going to say, you know, you were showing us a few pictures, you know, just, you know, of your family in the show prep and everything. And I was going to say, you know, that I've never seen a more lovely mulatto wife in my life. I'm sorry, these are the jokes, folks. That's not true.
Damn, Bellerophon, jeez.
To clarify for the audience, that was a joke. That was a joke. I guess I guess reading my own, like, bullshit copy about swinging chickens and turning off light switches just got me in a mean spirited mood.
I think I'm starting to rub off on you not in a good way.
Well, what can you do? And real quick, before you get back into it, just so the audience, you know, knows how to search for it, right? Could you spell out what they need to search for? You know, because mentioned there's huge J's in there, but just so they can be precise.
Yeah, it's Gingerzilla. That's all. It should come right up. It's like, there's nobody else with that name, so as long as you don't even have to type book, just Gingerzilla.
All right, awesome. But yeah, do you have any, you know, one of the reasons we did want to have you on, right, is because there is, you know, myself included, you know, big fan of your work. There's a lot of folks in the audience, I'm sure, that are big fans. You know, if we're looking for some last minute Christmas gifts, you know, what would you, you know, maybe for the woke people in our lives, you know, what would you recommend? What title is your favorite? What do you think would be a great, great gift?
Oh, for books? This is another loser. was me. I've always been like a weeb in a just particular way. I've always been a huge Dragon Ball fan. So just get comic books that are like, and on TDS the other day, they said Dragon Ball's for niggers, and I feel real salty about it still.
Solidarity, brother. I'm with you on this one.
Dragon Ball is literally the most racist comic ever made. I love it.
Yeah, who is it, Mr. Popo? You know, is just like a super boot lip, like really lazy drawing of a black guy. Is that the character?
Well, the entire arc of the story is about like an Aryan warrior race that needs to like free itself from the shackles of its like shape shifting feminine overlord.
Ginger, you referred to the comic, which raises an interesting question, which is like, do blacks read manga? Because my understanding of what you know, the death panel was saying was that
they watched the show.
The anime, right, is for niggers, but because you referred to the printed page.
That's
and,
fair.
You know what I mean?
So not only do you have to read, but you have to have the agency to read it backwards because it's Japanese.
It's how you return. That's why it's so trad. You're returning.
Yeah. So
do we need to do like Samus Dodd manga, I guess, to get the word out? Is that the new? Bro, is that the new avenue?
If we had our own army of mangaka doing works that was distributed amongst us, like, we would have an actual movement, and we would take the White House back overnight.
By the way, with
our army of manga reading weebs behind us.
By the way, show title Samus Dodd manga. Let's put that one in the hopper.
Definitely.
That's actually my next project I'm working on. I want to get away from the memes and move towards like an actual printed book that has a narrative. So I'll be the first.
Well, your series on the normal white guy caught between the homicidal donkey and elephant was fantastic. I mean, I think that was some of your all your work is great, but that was really at the top. And did you ever finish that series? I guess you kept getting banned around the time that you were putting those out.
It was a little arc. I don't know if you were some. I had two little mini series that I did. One of them was just a bunch of Star Trek jokes from Next Generation, and then I called it Nazball Z. And
another monster. That's the show.
It ended with I'm totally diving into like Dragon Ball lore now. It ended with like a mockery of the Goku and Vegeta beam battle. But Hitler was using his Sieg Heil against the merchants, like big purple, whatever Gallic gun, alternative. And obviously Hitler won and he blasted the merchant into space. And then like the next scene was the Star Trek, the Enterprise was like, Captain, there's an unidentified object approaching at 1488. So that's how I ended it. It was just like a teaser of a crossover. But I want to do something a little more serious and like moralizing, because making all these, like, I don't know, it does something to your soul drawing that Semitic face over and over again. So,
dude, I could imagine. I never thought about it that way, right? But you know, at what point, do you find yourself like getting a little bit more hunched over? You know, do you find yourself like rubbing your palms when you're not thinking about it? Like, is it having side effects?
I caught myself saying oy vey the other day, and I almost put one between my eyes.
Well, I was going to say, you know, the one that, the one that really stuck with me, right? The one that was, really, really moving, I guess, was the one, you talking about putting one between your eyes, you know, the young man who's holding a pistol to his head. You know, that one got a lot of traction, you know, for good reason, right?
I get a lot. I still get emails from people about that one and messages. People always tell me, like, I had a couple people tell me that they didn't kill themselves because of that. I don't know if that's people being exaggerating for effect, but being hyperbolic. But that's definitely probably my most popular one was that one. And that one got me banned twice. Don't tell white people not to kill themselves because you'll get banned.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the zeitgeist we're in right now, right?
Well, Thomas Rousseau got arrested literally for putting up stickers that were telling people not to do drugs.
Yeah, there wasn't even anything, it wasn't even like it's okay to be white or anything, which is already obviously just completely innocuous, or you would think, but it was literally just like, it was like with like drugs and pills, you know, like the syringe with the Ghostbusters thing through it, and he got arrested. So...
Yeah, I mean, of course we know he wasn't arrested because of the content. He was arrested because who he was.
Right,
but
right,
I mean, still, you have to press the point on that and frame it as well. Frame it rhetorically, because he's getting arrested for this. So you're punishing a man for the ideas.
Yep, and punishing him mighty gleefully, I might add. You know, I know it was not on anybody's like list of topics, but you know, just for comparison, right? Like, you know, who's the woman in Britain? I don't have the story at my fingertips, but you know, some recent immigrant to the UK, right? Like, slit this one girl's throat, this poor white girl's throat, and
oh yeah, I saw the stories going around about that. Yeah,
And anyway, you know, don't worry, though. The justice system was hard at work, and she was, you know, declared not guilty. I forget the exact vocabulary in their legal system, but basically by, like, reason of insanity was my understanding. And, yeah, so she gets to, you know, she got to had to fill out a little bit of court paperwork, but she's back on the streets, you know. So yeah. Don't worry. They're going after the right people, you know, folks who put up stickers about not doing drugs.
I'm trying to figure out the. I feel bad because I wasn't following that story, so I wasn't very familiar with it. Emily Jones, killer will not be convicted of murder. Here it is, right here. Yeah, because I remember seeing this on Bang. Let's see here. From one an excerpt from this, he added that Dr. Saeed Afghan, who was treating 30-year-old Skana at Rampton High Security Hospital, gave evidence yesterday, had also stated there are no alternative theories to explain her actions when she slashed schoolgirl Emily's throat in Queen's Park, Bolton, on March 22nd.
Yeah, and just to give you an idea, too, of just what an upstanding citizen, you know, this recent addition to the UK was, she had some quote, I guess, when asked, I think, like, you know, by the court psychologist, you know, are you sorry? How do you feel about this? And she said something glibly like, well, it's been 3 months now. What am I supposed to do? Just sit around crying all the time about it? You know, so, you know, don't worry. She's going to assimilate just perfectly. She's really going to help out the GDP of that country.
Yeah, it looks like the jury had previously heard from a nurse at Rampton who told how Skana revealed she had planned the killing, waiting in the park and chosen her victim. But Dr. Afghan stated that she made the remarks at a time when she had been taken off medication, so it was likely to be psychotic.
Well, I'm glad they're bringing in folks who are, you know, literally psychotic. You know, yeah. what a great and vibrant addition. What more could you ask
for? Actually, Ted Nosheds in the chat, because I think he's Serbian. But do you see why we Serbs hate Albanians? They did that to Serb kids for ages.
You know, admittedly, I'm not super familiar personally, you know, with the Serbian-Albanian history. But yeah, if that's at all representative,
what the Albanians in Kosovo did, especially KLM people did to the Serbs, there is just it's awful, brutal. I mean, like, that's the kind of stuff that Ted Nosheds absolutely correct. They Albanians did that kind of stuff during the Kosovo conflicts.
Well, and it's just a damn shame. I don't know. Admittedly, not to give short shrift to it. I don't want to dwell on it too much because it does honest to God get my blood pressure up thinking about this kind of stuff.
Apologies to Ted Nosheds. That's a whammon. Sorry, I misgendered one of our longtime listeners.
Well, hopefully we won't get deplatformed for that, but. But yeah, anyway, you know, Ginger, I didn't want to cut you off too much, man. So I think, you know, did you have a particular, like, title, you know, a particular book, you know, that you wanted to shill for us in particular? You know, any one of those that you're especially proud of?
I only have the one right now. It's just called Gingerzilla. It's literally everything I've done since 2017 that is not beyond cringe. I have a few things that I, when I first started, when I was like just dipping my pool in the JQ pool, dipping my toe in the JQ pool, and I was like, I had some libertarian priors that were peeking through. But it's other than like a couple that I was not gonna put in print. Pretty much everything that I've ever done for under the name Gingerzilla is in that book. So if you ever wanna have my stuff and not have to worry about if it's going to disappear tomorrow because I got banned again, and buy the book. They're there's a paperback and a hardcover. They're 7x10, so they're not huge. 156 pages.
Oh, well.
Hardcore cringe. I've done a lot. Chances are, even if you don't know who I am, you've probably seen something that I did and probably cringed at it.
Well, I could say the same, and I'm not nearly as prolific. But yeah, if you wouldn't mind, you know, just as we're going through the show, you know, in the show chat, if you could just drop a link, that way we can include it in the show notes and yeah. You know, shill on your behalf.
Yeah, actually, we do that right now because I already put up the post for the live show on therightstuff.biz. I can add that right now.
Yeah, I'll put it in there's Barnes & Noble one. Because nobody uses Barnes & Noble, I'll do the Amazon ones.
All right.
Awesome. Now we got the chat debating the AQ, the Albanian question.
Yeah, I just wanted shout out to Minesweeper who had a great comment. Dr. Afghan was Batman's primary nemesis in 2002 during the War on Terror arc. So
I can't tell if that's real or not.
Your winner keeps on, of the week keeps on winning.
we need to invite him on the show if he wants to start podcasting. I feel like he's got the Twitter chops for it. Which I guess do you guys want me to talk about? You guys want me to just talk about my winner then? Because my winner is Minesweeper.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, to clarify, were you talking about bringing on Minesweeper or bringing on Batman?
Why not both? Oh wait, no one's Jewish. Never mind.
If Batman comes from a Jew, we shouldn't bring Batman on.
Yes, that's true. I can't remember what the original tweet was. Minesweeper basically got the gist of it. But this all started because of a Hakan tweet that is finally beginning. Like the meme is really starting to pay off dividends now. Let me see if I can find the original tweet from. So if people don't know Hakan. Oh, here it is right here. So if people aren't familiar, Hakan is basically the super racist of of Twitter. He had some of the funniest takes. He's still around out there if you know the account to look for. But he was able to. He said something to the extent once that he has to memorize like 4,000 different genotypes to be able to be as effective as he is. But I don't remember what the original context for this was, but he had this famous tweet. Don't ever let a Brahmin privileged turmeric monster lecture you about POC, colonialism, cultural appropriation, or representation. Remind them that when Lord Indra arrived in the Ganges in his chariot to slaughter 6 million Dasyu aboriginals, the first word he said was namaste.
Well, as they say, there's a lot to unpack there.
And that's a general good taste of Hakan's tweets. Well, earlier this week, last week basically, you had this guy who goes by Sanjeezy on Twitter, and he had this tweet that went viral. Once again, trying to claim that the working class aren't the working class, that the white like that. Basically, they're trying to do this whole thing of turning all white people into petite bourgeoisie and rich middle class types because of the truck thing. But he tweeted, "It is odd to me that a $2,000 bicycle is a symbol of bourgeois excess, while a $50,000 F-150 is universally recognized as the rugged tool of the working class." Minesweeper ended up quote tweeting him saying, "Brahmin privileged turmeric monster who has never had to haul anything in his life wants you to know what bourgeois excess actually is." And because this is an Indian, he chose to engage with this tweet instead of blocking or ignoring it. And he asked Minesweeper, "The fuck is a turmeric monster?" Which stuck in this guy's craw so much that he then tweeted, "Some dude called me a turmeric monster, which is honestly fantastic. Eat shit, bro. The VP is Indian now. Turmeric also makes food better and will cure all of your illnesses." And then he changed his name to Turmeric Monster. Minesweeper seems to think that this guy is basically trolling him now because he tweeted recently, "Just went to pee in the backyard in the cold to avoid the splash and flush, waking up in the splash and flush, waking up a very finicky month-old baby. How's your night going?" So now
rent-free.
The turmeric monster's aversion from using the toilet isn't a learned trait. It's nature.
Wait, so to clarify, is turmeric like it'll cure all your ills? Is this like some kind of Indo-Aryan essential oil?
It's actually okay. So turmeric is a ground root, and it is actually quite. I mean, just to put on my, because these are my people, right? No, but in all seriousness,
it's not an Indian, okay?
I forget the terminal or so. I forget the chemical name. There's a compound that's pretty much it's very prevalent in turmeric. You can't necessarily extract it and derive the same health benefits, although it doesn't stop you from trying people from trying at the health food store. But its primary use is as an anti-inflammatory, and like the cutting edge of bro science on all this stuff is that like the reason why Tom Brady doesn't eat tomatoes is because I don't know if it's true or not, but according to his kind of fitness guru's system, tomatoes are inflammatory, and it does seem to be true to some extent that things that reduce inflammation generally are very good for your overall health. And and the less you are, you have like an inflammatory or that kind of immune response, that it causes fewer diseases, including potentially cancer. And so, there are real health benefits to having turmeric, and it's definitely like, I often put turmeric in hot water and have it like, it's like one of the only supplements I take, and I do recommend it. And it is a traditional Ayurvedic thing, and it does seem to go back, I don't know about necessarily to the time of the Vedas, but definitely to the Ayurveda, which is a late Veda, but it is a Veda. So if you want to put on your Indo-Aryan hat, you can definitely do that with respect to turmeric. There does seem to be some science to support this idea that turmeric is healthy. But I mean, to the broader point, like I just find it amazing that this guy is like naming himself Turmeric Monster to own himself in response to getting dunked on so hard. Like, imagine.
Well, this is
real quick. How do you pronounce it? I think I was mush mouthing the word earlier. How do you pronounce this ground up root?
It's turmeric or turmeric. Turmeric is the more proper way to say it. Yeah.
I gotcha. Well, you heard it here first, guys. That's how you say it, turmeric, and we all recommend that you boof turmeric at least thrice daily. But you were saying, Borzoi.
Well, I guess if I'm going to draw an actual point out of this, is that I imagine we're going to see a lot more of these types of interactions, especially with the GOP basically green lighting that we're going to have Infinity Pajits moving to the United States for tech visas and H-1B visas. But these people are, I've said before that Indians are kind of, they are a middleman ethnicity, but they've always been kind of like a bit of a, how do I describe this exactly? They tend to engage in a oddly sincere way, but being completely oblivious when it comes to anything. Like when they adopt, especially when they adopt other religions or other philosophies or other cultures, they try to assimilate it in a very strange and very oblivious way. So you're going to see a lot of this, of where they're engaging with shit posters and racists, trying to like doing like the whole skeptic thing. Like, I'm going to rationalize with this, and I'm going to discuss this and debate this. Like, no, I'm not having a debate with you. I'm just going to call you a bunch of racist names, and for some reason you keep talking to me. They have a tendency to just keep engaging well after the point that they should realize that we're just doing this to racially abuse them.
Well, if they're going to play along with the game, even if they don't understand the rules, I don't know. I get some cheap amusement out of it. So, so homeboy can carry on. Doesn't bother me a lick.
Yeah. So that's my winner of the week.
All right. And I was going to say, DK, what was your winner or loser that you wanted to bring up?
So this is my winner is also related to our friend Minesweeper, who is getting a lot of shout outs, but that's cool. We'll have to anyway. Which is the QAnon movement, and correct me if I'm wrong, Borzoi, because I know you. I've seen you and Mine discuss this on Twitter a bit, but I think if we're gonna put the original credit for this observation, it goes properly to Minesweeper, which is that that the QAnon movement is not going anywhere. That it is the that like this is what the GOP is now. This is the future of the GOP. This is like just where all the energy on the kind of broadly construed, the people who used to be Republicans are either now or will shortly be Q people. That is like the narrative, the kind of religious framework that's taking over. If you haven't listened already, Jazz and James on the latest free midweek FTN, which they very generously provided to non-paywall subscribers. Get a paywall subscription, you fucking cheapskates, if you don't already. But if you don't, you have a chance still to listen to their excellent, excellent, excellent kind of intellectual history of American evangelicalism and dispensationalism, and they tied it very deftly and very correctly to the QAnon movement as a kind of millenarian apocalyptic religious cult. I have, like, there's a lot. Sorry, Borzoi, you want to? There's a lot to say about it, but Borzoi first.
Just to clarify this a little bit as well. I don't think it really matters. Let's give Minesweeper credit. And we'll give him credit just because he's the one who's been, I think, most vocally talking about it the most and has been consistent in this. But just a reminder to people on this, because there were takes that people have always kind of wondered what's going to happen to this Q stuff, especially if Trump loses. What does a post-Trump era? And I know there's debate if we're even going into a post-Trump era. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, that there is, or enough has happened that it should have shaken the confidence of Q people, because things are not panning out the way they believed they were panning out. Do people know what the origin of the Seventh-day Adventist Church is? If people don't know, and I assume most people don't know, it comes from the Millerites, who believed the world was ending on a specific date, and they gathered for that. And when the world did not end, it was called the Great Disappointment. And yeah, a lot of those people went back to their lives. Some people went on to join different churches, different religions. But a lot of people stuck around and basically coped their way into creating a whole new religion out of that, of why they weren't fundamentally wrong about that. And that's where the Seventh-day Adventist Church came out of, was the Millerites. Cults don't die when things go against their predictions. They actually tend to get stronger. They might contract a little bit because you lose some of the people who were only there for just kind of on the margins and wanting to see what happened, or had just, they weren't fully invested within it. But the people who are completely invested within it, they double down on that. And it might evolve in different directions, but fundamentally, it's not going away. That's the take that Minesweeper has been running with, and also that it's stupid for anybody who, if they want to engage in politics, at least especially on a level that engages with the GOP, you're foolish to not even engage with this QAnon stuff on, like, even if it has to be on a cynical, detached level. These people have a belief system. It's very core. I say it comes from the collapse of Protestantism. The origin of it doesn't really matter, but they have a belief system, and it motivates them quite a bit, and it motivates them, whether you judge the efficacy of what they're doing, it motivates them, and you're a fool to not engage with that.
So before we continue, I have it queued up. Frank, if you want to play that YouTube video with the timestamp, this is from the Stop the Steal rally that took place in Georgia. This is Lynn Wood, who's going to be talking, the attorney who won that nice settlement for the Covington Catholic kid and so on, and he's been at the forefront of this. And again, I just want to ask, like, don't try to be as neutral as possible when listening to this. Try to analyze it as objectively as possible. We can call them grifters, and we can, you know, make fun of them, and that's fine. There's a time and a place for that. Maybe we'll do that in a minute. But we're trying to analyze this as essentially a religious phenomenon, and a kind of religio political. I mean, it's a kind of a new thing in certain ways, but just listen.
I was 16 years old. My mother died, went to the morgue, and my father went to prison. I didn't have one thin dime in my pocket. But I took the talent that God gave me, and I had the fighting spirit to make it. But in any other country in the world, I would not have made it. I made it because I was born in America, and America gave me the opportunity to succeed in my life. And that's why I love America, and that's why I'm going to fight for America, and that's why you're going to fight for America. This is our country. Don't let anybody take it away from us. It's 1776. This is our battle. This is our fight. This is for our freedom. 1776. 86 is back. Send a message from Georgia. The battleground state of Georgia. The battle starts here today at Wills Park, in this land, in this place, with these people. We're going to take our country back again. It's 1776. God bless you, and God bless America.
He's, yeah. He's actually, he's even like proof of what I'm saying as well. He's preaching in that low church Protestant
absolutely
style.
Well, and not only is it the style, it's actually the template. Like, it's a very common thing. And if any of you have any kind of exposure to that world at all, or even just familiar with it in passing, testimony, like a lot of people in this kind of born again Christianity type, these kind of movements come from very impoverished backgrounds. Often they are themselves former drug addicts. And the narrative that they run with is, I was the lowest of the low. I was drug addicted. I was an alcoholic, whatever. And then I, discovered I was saved by Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ came into my life and saved me from this abject condition. Now, I don't want to, I just want to be very clear. I'm not saying, I'm a man of faith, and I'm not saying that that is not possible or that didn't happen to some extent. What I'm pointing out is, in the kind of low church Protestant environment, it's very common you have these narratives of, I was down, I was out, Jesus Christ saved me, elevated me, and now, here I am, and I'm on top, and I can share this with you, and you too can have this kind of a conversion experience that's going to lead to you to a better life. Here in Lynn Wood's speech, he has effectively replaced the narrative. I mean, I'm sure he's a low church, I believe he's a low church Protestant as well, but narratively what's happening is he has replaced the figure of Jesus Christ with the kind of anthropomorphization or whatever of the hypostasis of the United States. It is the spirit of America in this narrative that is doing the function of, I was down, I was out, my mother, and abandoned me, or I was in this, really bad situation. But because of the saving action of America, here I am on top of the world leading this fight. And then just to round this out, because I think this is sort of where I think, and this is again ties into my kind of broader perspective and my topic. If we have time to get there, the language that he's using, I think it would be a mistake to kind of downplay it or to look at what's happening here and generally with what's going on, like at this kind of moment, a snapshot in time. Today's December 5th of 2020. As like these people are LARPing or these people are joking or not joking or whatever. They're just grifting. They're just trying to make money. Like, I don't think that's look, Ali Alexander's disgusting degenerate who's just trying to make money. Don't, and he was in the background of that scene and it's whatever. Okay. But Lynn Wood is not just grifting. Lynn Wood is invoking the spirit of 1776 and the violent revolution that it is a metonym for. Very deliberately, and I think I'm not saying that I expect the normie cons to rise up when Biden is inaugurated. I do think this is a more volatile situation with more potential for violence than people appreciate. And you can call his rhetoric irresponsible. I think that's kind of looking at it wrong. I get why someone would say that. Not necessarily our guys. I could just understand. But that is where. And I guess that's the point here, is this idea that, like, the country is being stolen, and if we allow this to happen, then we have betrayed 1776, we have betrayed the American experiment, we have betrayed the United States, and, therefore, whatever is, right now we're fighting this in the courts, but Georgia is a battleground. I mean, he didn't say, like, it's a legal battleground in Minecraft. He didn't put these kind of qualifications in. Us here on this panel and us and we on the dissident right, we always have to joke and make kind of qualifications and say, all these kind of things. Who knows? Maybe the full force of the federal government will come down crashing on Lynn Wood, because of these kind of rhetoric. But, I don't, this is a very volatile moment, an extremely volatile moment, and people need to understand that.
Well, what I'll say to some of that, because I disagree with some of that, I'm not gonna say that Lynn Wood is definitely not a grifter. I mean, just from what I, because his fight, what was his Fight Back Foundation, it has Bernie Carrick or whatever his name is on the board.
I don't know who that is.
He looking, it's not good stuff, DK. It's not,
fair,
it's,
fair enough. Well, he has Ali Alexander on stage with him. I mean, that's enough
like,
for me.
Like, he surrounds himself with, like, I'm not going to speak to what Lynn Wood's specific character is, but I do tend to judge people by the company they keep, especially if their company they keep is involved financially within what they do. So there's first of all, there's that aspect. This, and to what you're talking about, the FUD posting stuff as well. We get in trouble because the reason why we get in trouble is because the type of people who FUD post that kind of stuff, like the conservative types who FUD post, they're not considered a credible threat. They're allowed to blow off that kind of steam, so that's why they're allowed to do that. Now, you can look at this from a more meta-political aspect, and that's the way I look at this, is there are people that are energized by this. How do we find the good, well-meaning people within that and reach out to them and talk to them? Because I don't believe in quote-unquote red-pilling the normies, but I do believe that we have to constantly be talking to people, making connections, and developing a very strong vanguard of our own, full of people that have great qualities, that are people of good moral character, who are passionate, who want to do right by their fellow countrymen. And that's something to work on and cultivate. We just have to be careful of how we engage with these Stop the Steal rally type
people. Oh, yeah, well, and to be clear, I wasn't saying that maybe I misspoke or maybe I wasn't clear. I do think he is grifting to some extent. I just don't think you can... I think saying, oh, it's just a grift. My point was saying, oh, he's just grifting. He's just trying to get donations for this doomed legal effort. Like, that doesn't really, to me, that doesn't explain the religious fervor that I'm seeing. That doesn't, like, that's, again, not to say that's not what he's doing at some level. Look, televangelists were grifting too, but there was some element, what they were tapping into a genuine reserve of sentiment, right? And I guess that's my point is, There is, and maybe that's what you're saying as well, is like, you know, there's people who feel this way and we can reach them and maybe get them outside. I mean, that was the other thing was he was getting, Lynn Wood at that rally was saying that, you know, Republicans don't, if this happens or kind of almost, even if the, somehow it's prevented, like, you shouldn't vote in the Senate runoffs. Like, you have no interest in that because the GOP has failed you, the GOP has betrayed you, they're super focused on this Senate runoff, and unless you stop this steal, you know, unless they get on board with stopping the steal, then you should punish them for their betrayal. That was getting flack from Ted Cruz, from Newt Gingrich. Breitbart, interestingly, had a hit piece on him. People were coming out. So And I mean, I like, again, it's just sort of that is how a lot of people in Georgia feel. I saw a poll this morning that something like more Trafalgar Group said more than half of Georgians, which no presidential candidate, it got more than 50%. So this is a bipartisan majority of Georgians think that there was enough fraud to change the result in Georgia specifically. Now, whether something happens out of that or whether that ends up affecting the result or whether they're right or not, kind of almost isn't the point. There's something happening, and to some extent it's captured by like the Q movement, but obviously the figure of Q and the like specific prophecies that Q made or whoever was, you know, claimed that this is, we're now like kind of in uncharted waters.
Yeah. And one thing I want to be clear on as well is I'm not talking about how we have to go and recruit people, as it were, to whatever it is that we would be recruiting them for. When I talk about we have to engage with this stuff, because I actually explained this to a friend recently. I was like, you know, it's okay to have factions, and if those factions stay within their lanes, and then you can actually have this more dissensus kind of, you can guide things a little bit better, you can have this dissensus, you can be a little bit more cooperative. It's when there's this idea we all have to be on the same board and on the same boat that it tends to create all this instigation and fighting with one another. So I'm not going to say that we need to go like start, like, especially because we're going to come off as used car salesmen, then used car salesmen anyway if we start trying to pretend to be Q people, QAnon people. But it is encouraging to see people who are very adamant that I'm not going to vote, who are, you know, the Trump people. I have issues with Trump, obviously, but if they're going to be adamant that I'm not voting for the GOP because they screwed over Trump, then I will encourage that, and I want to encourage them in that direction. And if I can reach some of them and listen, I can convince them, like, hey, here's some other ideas you might be interested in. Hey, you should check this out. That's the way I view of how to engage this stuff.
No, I think that's more than fair. And wheeling back around, because I was kind of just digesting for a while there some of Len Wood's speech, and to the religious aspect, right? Like, it really strongly reminds me of you would see, especially in like Appalachian areas, not that long ago, tent revivals, where you would have a traveling preacher, going and just giving like really fiery sermons, getting people in a religious fervor, getting them on fire for Jesus, that sort of thing. And, a lot of the same, presentation elements are there for Len Wood. And I think that's what you're driving at, DK.
Yeah, it is. And sorry, it was go on. I didn't realize you were,
yeah, no worries. But yeah. And then, I think also to Borzoi's point, right, about how, I think what, correct me if wrong, I think what you're driving at is, much like with evangelizing for, say, Christianity, for example, a shotgun approach to just recruiting everybody is just going to make you a bit tired, worn out, and be ineffective. However, if somebody comes to you asking about Christianity, then they're probably ripe for the picking, right? They're ripe for evangelization. And analogously, you might not be able to reach all the stop the steal people, but more of them, I think this is what you're driving at, more of them than ever.
You meet people where they are, and you don't chase after people who aren't interested.
Yeah, yeah, precisely.
That's like, for sure.
If they start asking you questions, what I would say is, that's the moment where you evangelize. That's when you know they're ready. There's the old, parable about the sower and, sowing seeds. Sometimes the ground just isn't receptive to the seed you want to sow, and that's no big deal, right? You just got to look to where it does flower.
Part of what I was getting at with it also, that I think maybe this is too kind of high, maybe just hit my head with a rock if necessary, but what I'm getting at is you have to look at this as a religion. Is like in the background of that, or before you can even ask that question, is like, what is a religion? And this is a harder question to answer than most people really appreciate. People often make distinction between like, a religion versus like, people say, Christianity is a religion. Buddhism is a way of life.
I see Siege Baby's in a good mood with everything up is down, left is right. Everything's getting crazy.
So the point is like, once you get rid of these kind of definitions of religion, once you look at it from a kind of broader focus, because, if you try to say like things like, belief in the supernatural, well, that actually doesn't apply to everything that we would necessarily call a religion. Nor does things like belief in an afterlife. Nor does, there's a lot of, it becomes, what is an afterlife and what is a supernatural? And I mean, these terms are more complex than people necessarily, think about it at first glance. The best kind of working definition of religion that I see, and you see this, kind of in a more kind of academic settings, is people often look to Emil Durkheim, who basically, you don't necessarily have to like accept everything he said, he kind of was out there in certain ways, but he analyzed religion. The way he kind of came at a kind of grand unifying theory of religion was religion is a thing that gives a community, a people, a sense of what he called the collective effervescence, meaning you're in a kind of excited state with a bunch of other people in the same place in the same time, and this leads you to a certain kind of like social consciousness that is something that you engage in on a regular basis. So when you look at it from that angle, I think it you could, for example, a kind of easy way to think about it is football games or whatever, any kind of sports ball. When you have however many tens of thousands of people in the same place, in the same time, with a sense of collective identity, getting worked up, getting fired up, engaging in communal practices that are leading to this kind of state. And they often will do it kind of ritually over and over again. And people will often, there's a very real sense in which, American football has replaced Christianity as the dominant religion, the thing that people spend their time doing, getting fired up about on Sundays, right? And so I think you have to look at, you know, for all of the kind of millenarianism and this kind of thing and what whatever else is going on with it and the grifting, yes, and I don't mean to deny that I think that these people are grifting or that they're whatever. I definitely don't give them money. You like what is going on at that rally, at these rallies? I mean, the Trump rallies exhibited some of this, and now we really, really see it as what these are functionally Q rallies, right? The Stop the Steal rallies are now functionally Q rallies, even more than Trump rallies already were when they had people showing up with Q gear. It's you get people not only in the sense of collective effervescence like you see at a football game, but now in addition to that, invested in a narrative, right? Invested in a narrative of like, these are the things that are happening. These are the, you know, we're in the, whatever, the wilderness of the desert of Egypt, and we're being led into the promised land by, you know, Donald Trump. You can look, I mean, obviously that's kind of all bullshit, but it's bullshit, but they believe it. And the fact that they believe it, like, you know, if you're a Christian, you could think that Hinduism is just wrong and they're worshiping demons and they believe all kinds of wacky things. Okay. But if you want to analyze Hinduism as a Christian, it does you no good to say like, well, that's all bullshit and we don't need to take it seriously. It's like, no, if you want to understand it, if you want to be able to predict behavior, if you want to like get a good predictive model of the world, you need to understand from their perspective what they believe and why they believe it.
And I will say it's only tangential, right? But you know, when you talk about college football, you know, I certainly have a lot of memories, right, about like, you know, stoic grown men in my family, you know, being brought to tears, right? Like, because, the Bulldogs lost the championship game, or, you know, they get all misty eyed, you know, when they sing the fight song, you know, glory, glory to old Georgia. And, it's not necessarily a healthy outlet by any means, right? But there is, you know, how did you phrase it? The collapse of Protestantism is kind of, you know, it left a void maybe for a lot of these folks where Stop the Steal, where Q, all of that kind of fills in. Sports ball is certainly, I think, offers that religious aspect. Not just, I think people get hung up on the bread and circus aspect of a lot of sports. And, I never thought about what you just drove at, right? Which is that it fills, strangely enough, a religious aspect as well.
I think my initial reaction to watching that was how wasted that emotion is. I think that's something we need kind of in our sort of milieu is we are full of guys who are either really angry or just like autistically focused on just details and facts and disproving the Holocaust and any number of, or disproving this or proving that. And we don't have very many impassioned, people who are willing to, you know, who are on the left side of the bell curve, willing to get on a stage and cry. And that stuff works with like people and like middling and lower on the bell curve people. I think that and this is more my Grug interpretation, is people really do respond to emotional displays like that. If you can get up on a stage and cry about something that you're passionate about, it doesn't really matter what you're saying. It matters how you're making the people feel. And we don't have any of that. I think that's probably one of the things. And boomers are emotional. Like, I don't think I've ever met a boomer that wasn't like, didn't have like all kinds of feels for whatever. And I think they really, we need that. I don't know where it would come from, but you know, we don't have people getting, even on a podcast, giving a really impassioned speech where like they need to clear their throat because they're so into what they're saying. We have lots of we have tons of great content and people proving points, so that all the angry racist autists and anti-Semites that are in the world are drawn right to us because everything we're saying is true. But we don't have that hook to get the emotional boomer and Xer invested in what we're doing. So someone just put in the chat, feelings better than facts. And I do agree with that to some extent, because someone else in the chat also said that they overdosed on red pills. And I think that's kind of what we have. We have people who are just like, when you take all the red pills at once and you overdose on them, you just kind of become numb to the reality. And the only emotion you can really feel about it is anger, which is, I totally understand. I think we've all been there. But I think that a lesson to take away from that speech is that people are activated by their emotions, and you can rally people to your cause with emotions way more than you can with facts. So I think our goal should be to win over as many of the autistic soldiers, let's say, metaphorically, the guys that can do all the heavy lifting of the thinking and the writing and the content creation. But at some point, a pivot needs to happen where we're appealing to people's emotions and their base instincts versus trying to convince everybody with calculated rhetoric.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's also kind of impossible as long as there are Jews involved, right? Like, I mean, everybody, yeah. I think the way that I got, like, essentially red-pilled on the JQ was, you can always reach a certain point with facts and logic, talking about things with people on Twitter, and before I kind of fully understood what was going on, you know, I would try to have good faith discussions with people, and I what got me over the hump on it was noticing just over and over again, that this experience that, you know, our uncle describes about, you know, you argue with them and it's like jelly, and then they come back the next day and they're, you know, and it's like, what is wrong with you people? And as long as Jews are allowed to have a voice, as long as Jews can participate in the discussion and dominate, especially to the extent that they just completely own the platforms, like, you're never, like, they're always going to be able to find some bad faith objection, some bad faith niggling little question, you know, litigating some tiny little detail or Talmudry their way into, you know, well, what does this even really mean? But, and so you're never going to get anywhere. And the solution to that is, as Mike, you know, all just constantly hammers, is just fuck you, you know, and just blow past it.
Sorry, I was an idiot, and I was talking into the mic while I was muted up. Real boomer hours over here. But yeah, there is something to be said, right? Like, an ounce of passion, you know, is worth more than a pound of facts. You know, there is only so much hay you can make with table 43. As much as I do, as much as that is factual, as much as that is helpful, right? Like, having a little fire in your gut really does go a long way. Because I think that's sincerity, and I'm not trying to imply that Lin Wood is necessarily sincere here. I don't know. He might be, for all I know. But yeah, we are really starved for, I think, sincerity, in our personal lives, in from our leaders and all of that. Just because, you know, there's, by media programming, we've been conditioned that sincerity is weakness, that it's cringe, that it's stupid. And, you know, it reminds me, I guess, back in the good old days, right, of the 2015 Trump campaign. He, I don't even remember the location where he was stumping, where he was giving a speech, but he was just getting a little bit, probably due to narcissism, Trump was getting a little bit worked up, you know, a little bit misty-eyed himself at all the outpouring of support from the crowd. And it just started going on about, like, you know, And I love you guys. I love you. I just want to let you know, I love you. And, you know, as cheap as that might be, right, it might have all been showmanship in hindsight. But, you know, to have somebody, like, just be that stark, that sincere, you know, and just say, I love you. You know, it does hit people right in the feels.
I don't think people are willing to cross over a boundary unless they have that pulling them over. Like, just from my own anecdotal experience, I began in libertarian town, and my shameful past is that I used to watch Glenn Beck back in, like, the 2010s. But that guy was in every show he was fucking crying about something. But it worked. It pulled me from, like, this, like, neocon thing that I had grown up with my dad into being a more libertarian oriented. And then from him, Molyneux is the one that pulled me more towards the right, and into anarcho-capitalism. because of his like gravitas and his emotional way of speaking. And I think you need like at every level where you're going to cross a boundary from being, you know, from going from conservative to anarcho-capitalist, from anarcho-capitalist to racist, racist to anti-Semite. Like those boundaries are hard to cross. And I don't think you can pull people across. Some people you can, but I don't think you can pull the majority of people over with like evidence and documents and spreadsheets. You need something emotional to pull those people across that line. And we have people to pull us all the way to like our threshold, like the door of our house, but we don't have anybody inside that's making the emotional appeal. Like, come in here. Like, we are the real truth. And it's frustrating because we really are. Like, this is the end point of seeking truth, is where we are. And you can't help but arrive here. But I think there's a lot of people that show up at the door and then they, you know, a bunch of autists answer the door and they're like, I'm not going in there. That's weird. So
I'll choose to overlook that slight and then move on.
Hey, that was a self-own as much as it was.
Everybody put on your blue hat, you know, to please be patient with us. We all have autism down to a man. But yeah, I mean, that does, you know, that does raise a good point, right? That you have to how did Borzoi phrase it? You know, meet people where they are. You know, maybe you don't, maybe you don't lead off, you know, talking about, you know, your Warhammer anime crossover, Exto fantasy.
No, that has cross appeal. Absolutely lead off with that.
I've tried leading off with Table 43, and it blows up every time. Nobody likes it. Nobody, because they think you're talking. They perceive you as treating people like numbers, or treating humanity like it's a formula that you need to solve. But if you can approach it from, and the for all his flaws, Spencer was pretty good at this. I'll give him credit for that. At kind of talking to people in a more conversational way, and Mike's good at this too. But talk, you know, we all have the tendency to be like, but this statistic, look at this statistic. And most people's brains, when you show them a statistic, it just like, fuck you. That's a number. I can't process that, or I don't believe that.
I failed math personally.
Confirmed, not Chinese.
So I think it's a weakness of ours that we definitely, I'm not an emotional guy. Maybe somebody else wants to cry into the mic.
I'll tell you what the other aspect of that is, because you're completely on point with this, and I think people tend to either they just didn't experience it themselves, or they just tend to forget it, or they just haven't seen people do this. But people are primed through the programming and conditioning to have a bit of a rubber band effect. At least a certain type of people are. They have a rubber band effect when they finally come around to this. So I call it the red pill shock sometimes, and they go super extreme and in terms of their rhetoric or the things they believe. So, for example, actually Mike and Sven were talking about this yesterday. The I don't speak German guys that hate listen to all of our shows, they genuinely believe that we just want to go out there just gunning down non-whites, like, and all that's preventing us from doing that is the courageous FBI. They genuinely believe that, and they think that if we say, well, I'm not like that, like, no, you're lying. You're just being a liar. They think we're fundamentally dishonest people because that's what they think. And I've seen types of people who either they explicitly or implicitly believe that kind of stuff about us as well. When they are confronted with the truth and they eventually come around to it, they do have the mindset, it's like, oh my God, I guess I have to gun down a bunch of non-whites now. It's like, no, that's not what any of this is about. That's not what anyone's saying. We're just trying to talk about the truth here. We're just trying to point out actual facts, actual realities, actual lived experiences for people. And so when people hear stuff like the Table 43 stuff, like it can activate that aspect of them where they think this is just prime for you talking about wanting to put black people in camps. Like, that's how they think you're approaching them. And that's why it's very important to meet people where they are and to develop an effective way of speaking the truth in a way that people find both relatable and is easy enough for them to understand.
Well, and somebody in the chat was remarking that, yeah, numbers might not speak to people. Maybe we need to show them some graphs instead. Oof, man, jokes are landing flat today. But sorry, overall,
it's like everyone's making fun of me before the look at this graph.
Graph. The society,
industrial society,
lump controls,
techno-capitalism, nihilism.
if we can get like a just an EDM like house beat behind that, you know, that might make for a great intro music.
Oh my,
if you're taking suggestions.
Oh my God! Look at the DLive chat right now. Somebody made a GIF of a Borzoi dog doing the bit.
Oh man, dude,
collapse.
Chloe eyes really make it. We got to put that on. That's fantastic.
Yeah, Frank, if possible, if you could save that, that's something I'll get some mileage out of, at least personally. or you know, heck, give Boars a new avatar.
Oh, cool. I can actually save the GIF. I'm going to go post this on Twitter right now.
What's your dog's name? Oh, his name is Collapse. In the show chat, I'm getting pushback from Frank about that he'll never do EDM. Mm. So this is where the infighting really begins, I think. But yeah, if I'm not cutting anybody off, if we've kind of exhausted that as well, Borzoi, you know, did you have anything else you wanted to kind of jump into as we fill out the second hour?
We're doing pretty good on time. We've got about an hour. I don't know how much more you guys want to get into, because I got the Matt Yiglias stuff, and I got that Tablet Mag article, and I don't know which one you guys have a preference for.
I think looking over it, Matt Yiglias, I think, is just a giant lolcow, and I mean that in every sense of the word. He's a big boy, so I vote.
Yeah,
he's
fatter than I didn't realize he was quite so chonky.
I remember when he because he's been around for a while. I remember him when he was a lot thinner too. So I was shocked by how, because I just, you know, you see their tweets, you don't actually look at who these people are, even if you've known who they are for quite some time. I didn't realize how much he's been how much he's embraced big boy season.
how does that shitty meme go, right? Like, it's getting cold outside, ladies, get you a thick boy. You know, he's clearly taking it to heart. He's trying to stop global warming, so it'll be winter forever, so big boys will always be in demand. I think that's the real shot here.
It's always big boy season.
but if you want to jump into that some, you know, what was Mr. Yiglias getting up to?
He's got this book called, and I think I've talked about it before, he's got this book called 1 Billion Americans, and basically I believe his position is, well, there should be 1 billion Americans, and obviously the way to get to that is mostly through immigration. I think he tries to throw some kind of bone towards pronatal programs within the United States, but of course we know who he thinks should be the beneficiary of that. But he went on Joe Rogan, and his appearance there was not well received. It's funny how this is why they don't like Joe Rogan, by the way. I know there's stuff like about Joe Rogan himself they don't like, but generally it's his audience they don't like and the type of people who listen to Joe Rogan. Because when you see them bitch about Joe Rogan, it's almost always within the context of the type of guy who listens to Joe Rogan. A lot of those guys are, you know, you got some leftists and liberals among them, but you also have like what I call grug centrists. These are guys who got into Joe Rogan because of the outdoorsman and fighting stuff. And they're like the dude bro stuff, as they sometimes derisively call it. They don't like that audience. And so it's a funny pattern you see that whenever they have like a Jew like Barry Weiss or Matt Yiglias on, the comments are always pretty lit up. And the comments weren't as lit up as they were for Barry Weiss, because Barry Weiss can't help but talk about Israel, and that really set off a lot of the people. But these people respond on that instinctual grug level, and some of the comments about this were very funny. This, by the way, it's being downvoted to hell on YouTube as well, but this guy wants more boyfriends for his wife. This country should have 1 billion people in it, eats for two.
Damn, dude, the claws are out.
I saw an open borders for Israel coming in there. 1 billion people in America is the best idea since the razor blade frisbee.
I see what they did there, but you know, that's kind of dumb, but point taken.
The dude has a negative testosterone count. Joseph, help him on his diet, please. His roundness is offending me. And this is also why they want they're happier. Well, they're trying to move away from the comment system as well as and trying to get more podcasts onto Spotify where they can do a lot more of this curation because they don't want the comments. They do not. Elite types do not like opening this up and seeing this stuff. I should have noticed that Vox shirt a lot sooner than I did. The only thing this guy convinced me of is that exercise is important. But yeah, so this is why a big reason why they hate Joe Rogan. They hate the audience that he attracts, and these aren't people who are, you know, they aren't, a lot of them just aren't our guys. I mean, a lot of them have left liberal opinions, but it's the sentiments that matter, because especially if they're willing to hear somebody out, and that's where Joe Rogan got into a lot of trouble. It's like he's willing to hear people out, and it's not only that he'll hear out people who are controversial. He'll give elites like Matt Yiglias a seat at the table and allow them to express their views, and you realize that these people are how horrible these people are, and they don't know what they're talking about, or just they're just generally evil in a banal way. So I figure I've prefaced that quite a bit. Let's listen to the video at 1.5 theater. Why Matthew Yiglias thinks there should be 1 billion Americans.
A lot of people think that overpopulation is a giant problem. And then when you say we should triple plus the amount of people in the United States, we want to compete with the rest of the world, I would imagine a lot of people are like, what are you smoking, Matthew Yiglias?
No, I mean, the book's really good. So everyone who reads it is just like, oh, you convinced me.
And at least you're humble.
There's no pushback at all. There is concern about overpopulation. That's something that, you know, so there's people from the right. They don't like immigrants. They don't like immigration.
And why is
they
that?
See it through that lens.
Let's start with that. Well, because this is a country of immigrants. It's a very strange thing to have a country that is entirely comprised of people who came from somewhere else other than Native Americans, right? Entirely comprised. And yet there's a giant population that doesn't like immigrants.
Yeah, I mean, look, some of it's a question of taste. You know, people like different places. People like different kinds of things. I think the best parts of America are places that have a lot of people from different places. Yeah. To me, you know, whether that's Austin, where we are, New York, where I'm from, it's like, it's cool. Like, that's America at its best. So people don't.
Pause that for a second.
There's also,
so he's asked, first of all, why don't people like immigrants? And his answer is, well, it's a question of taste.
Does he eat them?
Yeah.
Is that...
Apparently, yeah. Dude, also for the audio only audience who's not seeing this video, like I'd seen still shots of Yiglias before, right? And dude, just watching his feminine little furtive movements, like I don't know, man. Just like my disgust response is kicking in hardcore, man.
But it also shows that they actually can't even answer that question. I mean, he could. The thing, Matt knows that if he says, well, they're racist, that's not going to do well, especially because Rogan's going to start grilling him on that kind of stuff, because Rogan does ask those types of type. Rogan, because he's so aligned with that fake and gay intellectual dark web stuff, would grill him on that, because they don't like how people are just the word racist is thrown around. So Yiglias can't go to that, so he has to do this weird pivot that doesn't actually even answer Rogan's question. And even the people in the comments noticed this as well. Like, he didn't answer Rogan's question one bit. Why don't people like immigrants? Why don't people like immigration? It's because he would have to, and this is why they don't want us talking, because there's no answer to that isn't just the truth. Like, people don't like immigrants because they want to keep their culture intact. They want to keep their wages higher, and people prefer their own. That's the simple answer to it.
Yeah, and just a reminder as well, right? Like, it's a matter of taste. You know, you go back to the mid-2000s, right, if I've got my timeline right, and, you know, the likes of Senator Sanders, Bernie Sanders, and the Sierra Club, you know, they were, you know, hardly far-right extremists. You know, they were calling for, you know, restrictions to immigration for ecological, environmental, economic reasons, right? So, you know, I don't like the fact that he's sort of papering over that there's a long history of, you know, wanting to keep your borders tight for, you know, any number of reasons other than just, you know, a matter of taste. It's just super dishonest.
Okay, we can resume. Lumpenproles.
illegality question, right? Starting in the 1980s and 1990s, we built up a substantial group of people who were living here illegally. I'm for, you know what?
It started in the 80s? Is that when it really started?
Yeah, I mean, that's when it really took off.
Was it because the regulations were made more stringent?
Well, so what happened was in 1996, they changed the law. ERIRA is the acronym for it. And they made it a lot harder for people who had come here without papers to, quote-unquote, get legal. So even if you put roots down, even if you were married to an American citizen, there was no way to obtain legal status. They also made it harder to cross the border. So it used to be people would come over, they'd pick vegetables in California for a season, and then they'd just go back, right? They'd go back to Mexico, take their money with them, get a nice house. They made it harder to cross the border so people would stay. And people who stayed had no way to get a legal status here. So unauthorized population, it built up.
Now we have an illegal immigration problem because we just made it too difficult. It used to be they just went home. We didn't do Operation Wetback or anything like that. They came here for a season, then they went home. The brazenness with which they lie is amazing sometimes.
The shape of his head is intended to distract you from what he's saying.
the audio audience is going to have a much different experience than the video audience. Because I think the reason why there's been a lot of silence is we're just all fascinated by his Matt Forney phenotype-esque aesthetic.
I'm like hypnotized by like an amorphous sphere that's like lisping at me.
It's like a talking egg on top of a pile of pudding.
Yes, a soft boiled egg. It's just like kind of jowling gay talk at me.
Yeah, I was gonna say, man, like somebody, like after the show, man, I hope Rogan like bullied him into going to the gym for a little bit, because that was like, I know we're at 1.5, right? But like, man, even just comparing his voice to Rogan's, you know, where one of those dudes is, you know, Rogan's not exactly a role model or a thought leader by any means, right? But at least he's done some manly shit in his time. You know, at least I trust his instincts. I'm hoping right after they recorded that he made him hit the heavy bag.
Yes, I will. I will definitely trust the animal killing manlet over the lump.
I gotta say, someone in the chat just said they speak very confidently and people buy it. And I think this is an important point. I know people like this. I'm sure we've all experienced it. There's an element to this. Even this guy, as repugnant as he is visually, and even his voice is off-putting. But these people, these are enemies, for lack of a better expression. They speak like there's no question behind what they're saying. And they have to know that on some level, all they're spewing is bullshit, unless they're so deluded they believe it. But they speak with such confidence and like certainty about what they're saying and authority that the average person is just like, okay, they just accept it. But that's what's great about somebody like Rogan, who is so grug that he's just like, bitch, please, when somebody says something that just doesn't line up with him. So it's all, you need that balance of the Rogan against somebody like this, because Rogan has that same level of confidence that another person questioning this guy might not have.
One other thing as well is what you're saying about people being dishonest but speaking with confidence. Actually, this is a trick that a relative of mine once taught me. He said, I can get now. He was doing this because he liked to play pranks on people. He'd tell them just outlandish or just untrue things just to mess with them. And he said, the way I do this is you just say it twice, because the second time reinforces it. Because what people tend to do is they express disbelief for a second, and then you just confidently reify it the second time and just say the exact same thing you said the first time. For example, diversity is our strength. Are you sure about that? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Diversity is our strength. And for a lot of people, that reinforces it and causes them to be much more believable.
I know somebody who does that, and I learned through trial that the best way to trip them when they do that is to say, you're lying. When you say that to them, they don't know how to respond.
Yeah.
It's always good to get to the point. Yeah, yes.jpg and no.jpg. They really are effective rhetorical strategies. Yeah. That's no joke.
All right, we can resume.
I've been on one side to say, well, we should create a path to citizenship for those people. Most of them, they're living here peacefully, they're working hard, they're not doing anything. That's where I stand. But there's people who say, look, you know, they broke the rules. We've got to be harsh. So we've been arguing about that unauthorized immigration so viciously. And I think we've lost sight of the fact that, you know, we can just create legal pathways for people to come. You know, some people will say, well, my grandparents, my parents, whoever, they came the right way. They didn't want to be legal.
It was easy then.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. It's totally true. So my great-grandparents, they came to this country at a time when there was no restriction.
Yeah, my people. Grandparents as well. They just came over from Italy.
Yeah.
Not that hard.
So good for them, right? Yeah. And so
there was no restriction? Okay, then why did the 1965 Immigration Act need to be passed? And it's because they had to get, and they removed the 19, I can't remember what year 1920 was, but the 1920s Immigration Act. So again, just another dishonesty. And he speaks with such confidence on it. You think, and they teach people this, that people do genuinely believe this, because this is what they're taught, that we had basically open borders up until about 1965.
Well, I mean, you know, if you say it loud enough, right? If you say it loud enough and you repeat it enough...
I just want to understand, so the idea here is we had open borders until 1965 when the Immigration Act opened the already open borders.
Yeah, you're zooming in on a great point, DK. We basically had open borders until there was an Immigration Act, which wasn't even really enforced until the 1980s, and then after the 1980s, when they passed more immigration, it actually caused us to have a huge illegal immigration problem because people weren't going back home anymore. That's literally his argument.
I feel like thunderstruck is an appropriate word right now.
Imagine a Jew just lying like that.
You really think a Jew would do that? Just go on Joe Rogan and tell
fucking
lies?
Kike. Fucking kike. Fucking kike.
I think Frank's been drinking this morning.
Like, yes, like, we should have a legal process for people to come. We can have rules, you know, try to make sure you're, like, say, you should be working age, right? You should come here, get a job, pay taxes. You can't just, like, come across and collect Social Security.
Yeah, but,
fair enough.
But obviously, you're okay with children coming across as well.
Yeah.
Like, whether they're adopted once they get here or whether they come here with their parents or...
I mean, we should make it possible, right?
Yes, we should make it possible. That's a great way of putting it.
And that's how you can not have people breaking the rules. Yeah. That's to me. But, you know, a lot of people on the right don't see it that way. Now, on the left, there's some folks... You know, people are concerned about the environment.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm concerned, too. I don't want to breathe polluted air. I don't want, like, cities...
Kaczynski.
It's a strain of sort of eco-apocalyptic thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, where people say, oh, like, we can't handle it. Like, only degrowth is gonna save us. And I just don't think that's right. You know, I am bullish on technology, right? We've got more and more clean energy sources. We've got better and better electric cars. There's more stuff we can do with electrification. We need to take those steps. But we can have a prosperous, sustainable society that has plenty of people in it, that has high living standards, things like that. So we don't need to worry about that. A lot of Americans also just overestimate how many people are here. So a billion sounds like a lot. It's about triple our current population. But that would give us the population density of France. It would give us about half the density of Germany, way less than half the density of the United Kingdom. And, you know, if you've ever been to the UK, it's a nice country. They got London, big city. Yeah. They got countryside. They got rolling hills. They got sheep. You go up to Scotland, and, like, there's fucking nobody there. So, like, we could have all kinds of places with a billion Americans. Countryside, suburbs, cities, all kinds of stuff.
What's the benefit?
Okay, stop right there for a second. Matt Yiglis, here's what I have to say to you. I think Frank missed my cue.
Frank! I'll just say it. Fucking kike.
Because I just want to
Frank Christmas.
I want to make soap from kite.
That's not what I was trying to say. Frank, there was something else that I think I was trying to ask you to play, what my statement to Matt Yiglis was.
Fucking kike.
we're in full... Our producer's in full rebellion.
That's so right gay. Now.
Hello! You...
I was just trying to get him to play the board so a drop board all at once. But oh,
also,
Frank's lit right now.
We can only hope to be that lit. But yeah, to the point earlier, we were talking about kids coming across the border, right? Like, yeah, I mean, doing a quick physiognomy check, I bet he's all right for non-labor reasons for kids coming across the border.
Do you guys even want to listen to the rest of it? I think we get the point of it.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, I think we've got the gist here.
Yeah,
I will say this. I will just one quick thing. not under this system, this thoroughly illegitimate system that must be destroyed for the benefit of humanity, not because people like Madagla, whatever, say so.
Madagascar, Euclid.
Like, there is something, I mean, let's say, you know, there's North America is a very big place, and 500 million white people on North America, 600 maybe million white people in North America wouldn't necessarily be the worst. I'm sure there's a way we can preserve our environment, we can preserve the sense of, you know, like, people in America like to have lots of open land. I think we can preserve that with a bigger population, right? Like, that's fucking awesome, right? For those of you who just listening, Frank is juxtaposing a picture of egg fat lard face.
Oh my with, God.
with a prisoner at a little hand camp during the Second World War. But
it's uncanny.
It's really great. Same exact physiognomy. But yeah, just to say, like, there's a sense in which Maddie isn't 100% wrong, but not like that, right? Not under these circumstances, not in this way. That's what I would say.
Yeah, well,
I mean, basically, okay. Yeah. My answer to Matt Yiglis is hashtag graph Twitter. Like, you are wrong, the Fat Controller said.
Graph. Graph.
Before we move on, I think there's a nice, if everyone's okay, just real, there's like a quick kind of, on the same topic of just lol cows. Here's a quick two quick, my loser of the week is Roger. Let's do this one first. This is, Frank, the second link that I just think you want to pull that up just because, this gem happened earlier and it really is just, I think it kind of says it all really as to what conservatives are, what conservatism is. Rod Dreher writes, "Hey, at Eric Metaxas, in this op-ed you tout, Jay Zmirik IDs me as one of the, quote, servile Christians who won't defend Trump. JC says on your show that he wouldn't, quote, piss on Christians like me if we were on fire. Am I servile? Would you piss on me, old friend?"
I see we've got an R. Kelly fan over here.
I can't. That's a Reddit, but I literally can't. I mean, what? Can you imagine typing these words out on the internet and just putting it out there? Like, I mean, thinking that, yeah, would you? You know, you're such a spiritual little bitch. All you have is this idea. You know, you hide behind this constructed identity of Christianity. Again, I am very pro-Christian, more pro-Christian probably than most guys in this thing, other than like the actual, you know, like Christian national, whatever. I'm very pro-Christian, but what Ron is doing here is a prime example of the kind of shit. It's exactly like what's his face, the True News guy, Rick Wiles, was doing, right? He has this identity, and to some extent, the guy, I can't remember, the libido dominandi and the Jewish revolutionary.
Oh, E. Michael Jones.
E. Michael Jones, thank you. Same thing, right? Mike Jones is a little better, but it's the this idea that we have this constructed identity of Christianity. I'm going to hide by that. I'm going to use that as a rhetorical shield to prevent me from doing any of the hard work of examining our actual political situation, of examining like what's actually going on. And Rod, more than most, knows, because I still follow his blog just to kind of take the temperature of a certain sphere of conservative world, see like, you know, what is going on in their minds. You know, he had a thing about this. There was a situation where, you know, basically just he does keep a running tally of anti-white hatred. And within the past year or so, he has started using the phrase anti-white hatred. So to some extent, he knows what's up. But here he is asking, you know, oh, am I a servile? Would you piss on me, old friend? Because, you know, like, what the fuck? The other tweet, which is just kind of, I mean, like, I think it speaks to the same. This is like he's retreated completely from any kind of meaningful analysis. Here, Frank, if you want to pull up the other one that I linked to, And he just gets owned in a kind of hilarious way. Yeah, where he starts by saying, "This sinister mushroom arose in our backyard. What kind is it? Never seen one black like that. Or maybe it's an ordinary mushroom that is blackened for some reason. Mycologists, help!" And then a guy, Jake the Halls with bows of Robbie, says, "Hi, Rod. I'm actually a grad student in the third year of my mycology program at MIT. I'm actually doing my dissertation on this species. Can you tell me if there's any up dog between the gills?" And Rod Dreher asks, "What's an up dog?" I mean, just a bumbling idiot. Just like, this is the hardest right. I mean, who is a kind of more hard, quote unquote, hard right or whatever? Like, Rod Dreher is like the kind of hard right edge of the Overton window as far as acceptable, quote unquote, conservative.
He's about opinion, as right, as you can get, at least in terms of conservative Christianity. He's about as right as you can get and not be deplatformed on any level.
And his Twitter is nonstop, like, asking his friends to piss on him. Oh, look at this mushroom. You know, oh, I look at this beer that I got from Italy. You know, I mean, it's pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic. And I just wanted to, like, you know, I mean, I don't know what else to say, you know, other than, like, this is just the so-called, you know, this is like the kind of, what is it, the red strawberry flavored version of the, you know, the blue raspberry flavored extremely high fructose corn syrup soda that we saw with Matt Iglesias.
Techno capital. Humiliation.
Yes, that's exactly right. And he has internalized, thank you, Frank, and he has internalized the humiliation to the extent where he doesn't even need an external source. He doesn't need some Jew to, like, put him through the humiliation ritual. No, he humiliates himself on purpose. Like, just doing it. I mean, he's like, "Yes, please look at me. I'm humiliating myself. Ha ha! Isn't it awful how much of a humiliated, abject little contemptible worm I am?"
Isn't that what conservatives do, just in general, anyway? I'll cuck me before you can cuck me. Like, that's the whole conservative platform.
You can't piss on me if I've already pissed on myself. Checkmate, retards.
Owned.
Oh, man. Yeah,
here's the problem with talking about this, because he's just a visceral encapsulation of what conservatism is. So all I need to do is point to Roger as, like, what else do you want me to say?
Yeah, that's like the champion of the right paint, you know, the right little flange of the Overton window. That's your champion conservatives. That's your hardest guy. Pathetic. Well,
I guess I can talk about this then, because I didn't think I was going to have any reason to talk about it, but I was going off on J.D. Vance earlier this week, and he is connected to Rod Dreher because J.D. Vance had his conversion to Catholicism presided over, well, I mean, it was attended by Rod Dreher.
Yeah, they were in touch, and Rod was instrumental in getting his book to a wider audience, and then became the movie that they were dunking on Tedious the other day as well. Yeah, Rod is a big part of the J.D. Vance story.
Yeah, and I haven't read his book, I'm never going to, and I'm not going to see the movie either, and J.D. Vance is, I know these types of people. People can go into, well, how truly hillbilly was he, you know, if he was, you know, how in touch was he with these people? That doesn't really matter. He comes enough from that world that he knew people like this, and he's fundamentally a traitor to them, because he knows what has to be done to become a striver, to have any success outside. I mean, there are plenty of us who early on could have almost certainly, if we had worked towards it, joined the various lower levels of the echelons of power and influence and think tankery and wonkery and wankery and all that. And we knew what the price of that was. Like, I'm not debasing myself or betraying the people that I come from to pursue that. He did, and he didn't have an issue with that. His whole thing is, I'm making sure, signaling to elites, like, oh, look, I came from this bad place and I succeeded, and look how bad all these people are. They deserve their suffering, and they deserve everything that happens, because they're just morally corrupt people. And he knows, like, how bad of a look that is, that he even has this program in in Cincinnati, in Ohio, that's supposed to fight drug addiction. But it's just another NGO that sucks up money. Does anyone genuinely believe he's actually helping drug addicts in Ohio? So if people don't know what I'm talking about here, this is J.D. Vance. He's the author of Hillbilly Elegy. And I'll just, you know, all he had to do is look at his Wikipedia to see who this person actually is. Because his book is all about the various problems and things he saw with his supposedly hillbilly grandparents that he spent summers with. But he was, let's see here, So after law school, Vance worked as a principal in a venture capital firm owned by Peter Thiel, known as Mithril Capital Management. In 2020, Vance raised $93 million for Narya Capital based in Cincinnati, Ohio. In December 2016, Vance indicated that he planned to move to Ohio to start a nonprofit and potentially run for office and work on combating drug addiction in the Rust Belt. The nonprofit is called Our Ohio Renewal. In January 2017, Vance became a CNN contributor. In early 2018, Vance was reported to have been considering a bid for U.S. Senate as a Republican. Vance is a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, researching American society and culture and the social impact of economic policy. Vance is married to one of the former law school classmates, Usha Chilakuri, an Indian-American woman who was a law clerk to Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts during the 2017-2018 term and clerk for then-Judge Brett Kavanaugh in 2014-2015. In August 2019, Vance converted to Catholicism in Cincinnati, Ohio, in a baptism ceremony attended by various conservatives, including Rod Dreher. In an interview with Dreher after the ceremony, Vance said he converted because he became persuaded over time that Catholicism was true and described Catholic doctrine's influence on his political views. So, I mean, the story right there is just tells itself, and he's obviously going to become one of these nominal tradcasts that are using this as a way to enter in the safe conservative area of the D.C. Beltway politics, but it's done in a way where they signal, like, well, I have this hardcore Christianity, but nothing in their actions really translates into it. They'll write this wankish think pieces about integralism and the like. They'll go down the Adrian Vermeule path and all that, but they don't care about the people. They don't care about poor Catholics themselves.
Your ancestors skewered kebab at Tours and at the gates of Byzantium. You write weepy little fucking tracts. You are gay.
But exactly. He's not going. He doesn't care about the actual Catholics within the United States, especially the white ethnic Catholics. He doesn't care about the people he came from. He's there to paint a certain picture of a certain type of conservative intellectual fellow that's leading this. Oh, we're the quiet remnant that are trying to, you know, restore the true spirit of America and get it to become a truly integral Catholic country. Meanwhile, you're aiding and abetting in the actual gutting of the people in this country through your investment capital firms.
Yeah, and I mean it's been discussed elsewhere, right? But like the whole arc is, I managed to escape this evil backwards area, you know, and you too, if you're just down with neoliberal values enough, you too can escape it and become an aspirational, you know, movie producer or TV producer, and sell a script and, you know, sell out your own people and never see them again.
Louis Conde described it perfectly here. Autistic diatribes about Vatican II, but never helps a single person.
Well put. I might keep that quote in my back pocket. It describes a few people I can think of. But
so that's. I just wanted to go on the J.D. Vance rant.
Oh no, totally understandable. But yeah, so if we've exhausted that, I think Boris, we hit most of the stuff you wanted to touch on. DK, did you have anything still in the hopper you wanted to address?
I think it's better to go. We'll just close out maybe with Boris Oy's Tablet Mag article, because that's always good.
It's pretty funny from what I can see.
I gotcha. If you don't mind me squeezing in, we'll probably just need to spend 5 minutes.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, beforehand. I didn't mean to. Yeah. No, I didn't realize you hadn't even. Yes, sorry. Go on.
Oh yeah, I think I accidentally skipped over my own winner and losers in the intro. Self-hating over here, I guess. I've just internalized it. But no, mostly what I just wanted to touch on really quick. So this I dropped it I dropped it in the chat, I think earlier, Frank, but the headline just tells you everything you need to know. Seattle social worker murdered by client as city wants to replace cops with social workers. Now, the Coulter rule appears to be in full effect here, because they're showing the picture of the victim, right? You know, this white woman looks to be of a cat lady persuasion, you know, who got stabbed to death by one of her social work clients. And after a quick look, I could not find a picture of the gentleman, right, who did the stabbing, her client, who is a good boy, presumably. So, you know, I'll let your imaginations run wild and apply the Coulter rule here. But, you know, just, I don't know. It was just a bit of schadenfreude. Like, I don't want social workers to get hurt. I really don't. Like, I know many social workers are of a bent that I disagree with. They've got a terrible worldview as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, throwing this out there, you know, folks like me and folks like folks on this show, we're not the ones advocating for a system where you get stabbed for doing your job. You know, just, oh, go ahead,
Matt. The conversation we had before the show was interesting, because when you brought the story to my attention, I was sitting there thinking, like, that's kind of an old story, though, unless this did another one happen. That's when you and I were talking, and this is the same story that was out a couple weeks ago. But you showed me that, well, they're all talking about it now. And that's an interesting discussion there, because I think what's going on also, why are they suddenly talking about this story? Why is the story in all these different publications when it happened a couple weeks ago when it first hit the news? And that was more of a local news and more of a local interest to people within our spheres that, well, it was an I told you so piece that people were indulging a bit of schadenfreude in. But it occurred to me that the reason why this is suddenly being broadcast a lot is there was recently, just the other day, Obama was talking about the defund the police movement as well. And I would say that they're trying to roll up that now, and they're trying to put an end to that. They're doing like a, what are they trying to do? Like they're just trying to quietly roll that up now and put it back into the closet. And so they're doing it by amplifying stories like this to show the absurdity of it, and they're bringing attention to it so that the you know, any left-wing Democrats get back on board with this, with the neoliberal project, and is like stopping these, you know, these insane, goofy people with weird ideas get back on the neolib train here. Or, you know, this is, anyways, I think that's why they're amplifying the story.
No, and that's, yeah, and thank you for reminding me of that, because it had slipped my mind, right, that pre-show conversation about how, you know, much like, analogously to BLM, you know, BLM was, you know, hot and heavy over the summer and into the fall leading up to the election. You know, every aspiring rapper, you know, who had been caught in an altercation with the police, no matter how well deserved, you know, that gentleman's fate might have been, you know, there's a riot about it, there was looting, you know, there was a big to do, there are headline after headline dedicated to it. But then after the election, right, it all quieted down. We talked about it some the other week in passing, about how BLM is kind of, you know, it's like a locust, you know, it stays underground for a couple of years, and then it'll reemerge, you know, it'll emerge from hibernation, right? Come back out, and then when they don't find it useful anymore, they'll put it back in the cage, and you won't hear anything about it. And analogously, you know, the defund the police bit, that's served its usefulness through the electoral cycle in 2020. So, you know, they're trying to put that cage back in, because I suspect we're all on the same page here, right? Like the neoliberal order does not want to make the police go away. Like, quite the opposite. You know, they might want to change how the areas that police protect. You know, they might want them only to protect the elite areas, protect the Capitol building, you know, protect the Senate, you know, protect Jeff Bezos and his like. But
they also want to federalize them, but they don't have the money and the resources, and not all the pieces are in place yet for them to do that. So for the time being, they do have to maintain the local police. Ultimately, they do want those local police gone, because local police tend, you know, I mean, they know the people there. They're going to be more inclined to be a little bit more nuanced in how they handle that stuff, but they don't have the capability to across the entire country to federalize the entire police yet. They have to get that into place.
When the fuck did TV become real?
Yeah, no, and that's also an excellent point. But, you know, also, I do know we have the occasional hate listener, right? And, you know, I would just like to say to those folks, you know, if you're hate listening, if you are protesting for defund the police, this is just a reminder that if you held your nose, campaigned for Biden, voted for Biden, whatever, that, you know, they don't care. They're not going to enact your pet project. They're not going to defund the police. All of the efforts to do it have been largely token. You know, we're going to scratch 1%, 2% off the budget, call it a day, never bring it up again. So just a reminder to the hate listeners, if you are all about defund the police, you're just going to get betrayed by neoliberalism once again. You are a useful tool, and you should feel bad about it.
I don't think they're capable of having feelings.
Oh, fair enough. Well, in which case, I felt better. I felt better excoriating them, though. So, you know, there's that. but yeah, that was really all I had in the hopper. If we wanted to discuss it, you know, is just Biden kind of saber rattling at Iran over the nuclear scientist, you know, their nuclear program that's sort of coming back into the forefront. And there was a Haaretz article on it, but admittedly, that probably needs a proper treatment. We wouldn't have time for it. If you've got a more lighthearted tablet mag bit, you know, I'd love to hear that.
Okay. Litmus Tests Online. Why is a private Facebook group for women expelling Jewish members? By Emily Benedek. Girls Night Out is a secret Facebook group for women in Los Angeles. Secret because if you search for it online, you won't find it. Secret because if you want to be a member, you must be invited. Created by a USC communications grad as a virtual sorority house and networking node for the sprawling megapolis in 2011.
Which is wrong. The word is megalopolis. They're fucking ignorant. Continue.
Yeah, that's why I was looking at this. Something wrong about this is wrong. In 2011, it's grown to more than 30,000 members. GNO is a place to share social news, recommendations about restaurants and nail salons, and also to talk about politics or relationships or show business. It's a place to feel safe with no men around, said one GNO member. It also offers valuable work opportunities for LA's large freelance population. By commenting on threads, fitness trainers, chefs, makeup artists, and the like can improve their bona fides, and if they are lucky, get new clients. Artists can sell their wares, and PR pros can announce hot new openings and pop-up stores. I was told this is the spot where everything happens, said a 28-year-old actress. Everyone's in it, and they have a subgroup called GNO Casting, on which she learns about auditions. It's also the perfect gateway drug to the dream of going viral. I've seen a girl make a random post about macrame, and suddenly she has, like, 30,000 posts, and her business is popping. GNO's... Feel free to jump in anytime. This is very shallow at times. GNO's commercial promise is so great that a nutritionist who in 3 years of membership had not gotten a single client from the site still holds out hope. All you need is one person, and they can tell their friends, she told me, all you need is one. There's so much sadness.
Oh, man. Get some more wine and Xanax for that girl.
That's the loneliest paragraph I've ever seen. All you need, like, teardrop.
There's a lot in this article. It's the little things that make it great. GNO's numbers grew and the reach of its network multiplied until 2020, after hundreds of Black Lives Matter protests erupted statewide following the death of George Floyd in police custody in Minneapolis. GNO decided to increase its commitment to the BLM movement. Once the protests start happening, people post about how to get involved, organizations to support, where the protests would be, said one member. The group also tried to add administrators and moderators who are BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, and people of color. Moderators help decide if posts comply with the rules of the group and Facebook's community standards, and they have the power to admit and boot members. Admins do the same, but have the additional power of adding or booting admins and moderators. What do you guys suppose happened after this point? What do you guys think happened after this started?
Everybody got along swimmingly, and they all became each other's bridesmaids at their wedding.
I guess that some of the BIPOCs were a little too woke in the Farrakhan
racist,
variety.
Racist!
On August 22nd, a young Jewish group member saw a sign hanging over the heavily trafficked 405 freeway in L.A. that read, "The Jews want a race war." So
where's the lie?
I remember when racist. This happened, by the way. And so to the guys, if you are listening, to the guys that hung that, I want to congratulate you. I don't know what impact you were expecting to have, but you definitely started a flame war in one of the, in a very large Facebook group full of 30,000 women. So at the very least, I will congratulate you on this. It upset her, and she asked in a GNO post what others thought about it. A member suggested some Jewish representation was also needed in the group after noticing some fishy anti-Semitic stuff. At first, the comments were responding to the suggestion were positive. Then on August 29th, a member posted, "I feel that the Jewish admin who is appointed must also acknowledge the occupation of Palestine."
Oof. And well, hey, hard endorse.
And all hell broke loose.
Why was I dressed
within
as Hitler?
Hours,
why was he dressed again, as Hitler?
Remember, and this is something that the guy's been talking about as well. That Jews are not like Jews did not allow Palestinians to ask questions, to grill them, much like the way that whites are subjected to being grilled constantly. And it's nice to see a little taste of their own medicine sometimes. Within hours, every Jewish member who had tried to explain why a litmus test for a good Jew was anti-Semitic was thrown out. Every Jewish member who asked why an American Jew should have an opinion on a foreign matter, however incoherently phrased, was expelled. Anyone who made a comment supporting Israel, explaining the history of Israel, or who liked such a comment, disappeared. Said one Jewish member who was not expelled, "It was all over so fast that if I hadn't personally known one of the girls who was thrown out, I wouldn't have known anything had happened. And the 29,990 other people have no idea those women have been kicked out."
Oh my God, it's literally another Shoah.
I have no idea 6 million of us were kicked out of this group. One of the members who was severed from the group, a Korean-American Jewish woman named Skylar Cutler, was so incensed that she contacted Tablet with her story.
"I'm going to complain to the manager."
But that's there's again like when people like try to mock the idea of a Jewish conspiracy. Remember, these people have media contacts that they can go to. If you got expelled from any kind of group, who would you be able to go talk to? Who would you have that would print your story? Whenever people try to mock the idea that Jews engage in any kind of organized manner, there's any kind of conspiratorial notion. Like, just remember, like, point this stuff out. Point this out. They have contacts and they have resources that nobody else has. Nobody else has this. The swiftness with which the Jewish women were kicked out without any explanation, she wrote, was shocking and a moment of realization that anti-Semitism is now mainstream. Even though the Jewish women who spoke out were ethnic Korean, not white, Mizrahi, not white, Sephardi, not white, and Ashkenazi, not white, we were collectively dismissed and branded as white racist bad Jews who were in support of oppressing the brown and black Palestinians. There you go.
You tell me. That's quite an admission from, admission against interest, I would say.
Yeah. I'm going to highlight this and screen cap that for later and post that on Twitter. Just as a reminder. A small but loud cohort of women on the site espoused a simple but false syllogism. Israeli equals white and Palestinians equal black.
Sure. I don't know. For purposes of this, because I want to see how this goes. Yeah, sure. I'll bite on that.
Head turns the profile, very confused. Yes. Tablet has chosen not to publish the names of any members of GNO. I just realized that what GNO was making me think of was making me think of the GNNA, the Gay Niggers Association of America. This is the Gay Nigger Organization. Tablet has chosen not to publish the names of any members of GNO who have not explicitly agreed to have their names revealed, as they have indicated fear of the consequences for their work and personal lives. Oh!
What?
Let me read that again.
Who could have guessed?
Tablet has chosen not to publish the names of any members of GNO who have not explicitly agreed to have their names revealed, as they have indicated fear of the consequences for their work and personal lives. Interesting.
Sounds like a veiled threat to me.
Yep. Although Tablet has interviewed and read posts written by a dozen members of GNO, only Skylar Cutler was willing to have her name published. Formerly employed in the entertainment world at a network, she has now left show business. What I saw and experienced in that group, wrote Cutler, was Jew hatred cloaked in the veil of social justice. I had to speak out. After GNO... After the GNO post that lit the fuse, the rumpus was over in a few short hours. Cutler had argued valiantly. Do Arab admins here have to acknowledge the historical and ongoing slave trade of Africans and Arabs, she asked. Are American admins regarding our war with Iraq, our treatment of our natives, etc., also asked to acknowledge the ongoing conflicts of our country? I'm sure the answer is yes to those. Well, maybe not the Arab one, but that, they always play fast and loose with that one. An Israeli member added, of course I'm against the mistreatment of Palestinians. I'm vehemently against Netanyahu. I'm against annexation. I'm pro-two-state solution. But asking all Jews to speak about Palestine is inherently anti-Semitic, whether intentional or not. Most Jews have absolutely nothing to do with the Israeli government.
Okay, Jew. So I am an American, and I'm against the mistreatment. I mean, for let's just say, like actual mistreatment of blacks. I'm against that. I don't think blacks should be mistreated. I'm vehemently against Donald Trump. I'm against, you know, whatever. I'm pro segregation. I'm pro two-state solution for American whites and blacks. But asking all American whites to speak about blacks is why do you think that American whites don't have a responsibility to address this question of the relationship between whites and blacks in the United States? Would you accept that premise? Would you accept the frame of that discussion? Oh, you wouldn't. Oh, that's interesting.
asked why only Israel was blamed for the lack of a peace agreement and not the Palestinian leadership or the Arab... Oh, another asked why only Israel was blamed for the lack of a peace agreement and not the Palestinian leadership or the Arab League. The member who originally proposed the litmus test statement about the occupation responded with false claims. Palestinians are being annexed from their lands. You cannot be for black liberation and for the occupation of Palestine. Let's see here. Third Rail Fact Check has actually rated that statement true.
Yeah, I endorse.
A Russian Jewish woman then remarked, please educate yourself on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Yeah, okay, educate. In other words, just accept our propaganda. Because, like, I mean, it just drives me up the wall. Sorry, go on.
The litmus test proponent then made her intentions clear. They should be removed from this group because they've been hiding their racism, and here it comes out. Cutler offered some history of the founding of Israel. She was the first to be expelled from the site. One Jewish member noted in despair, was Skylar just kicked out for acknowledging that we are allowed to be sympathetic to both sides? If she really was kicked out for that, I have no words. Finally, the woman in charge, the single administrator left standing after an internal administrative purge orchestrated by herself, the single person responsible for approving posts, admitting new members, and selecting the expelled, wrote, Skylar wasn't kicked out for acknowledging we're allowed to have sympathy for both sides. She was kicked out because her rhetoric was strongly skewed toward one side.
I actually don't have... That's probably true.
Yeah. Also, I think the admin there, the sole admin, I think what she... You could summarize what she was driving at. She said, you know, I had to shut their lying mouths.
The admin further wanted everyone to know that the request for a statement acknowledging the occupation was not anti-Semitic. Perhaps she just didn't understand. A recent poll conducted by the American Jewish Committee shows that nearly half of all Americans say they have either never heard the term anti-Semitism, 21%, or are familiar with the word but are not sure what it means, 25%. I'm doing that from now on. If I ever hear the word anti-Semitism, I'm like, I've never heard that word before. What is this?
Oh, I'm familiar with it. I'm just not sure what it means.
What is anti-Semitism? Can you define it for me?
Apparently it means like having some kind of like dumb digital spat with with randos.
That's amazing to me. I don't believe those numbers for a second, but I'm that's bullshit, but I believe it. If I'm going to believe, then I choose to believe now that half the country has never heard the word anti-Semitism or doesn't know what it means. I just choose to believe that now. The International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance working definition. The IHRA, the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, working definition of anti-Semitism includes illustrative examples. One is holding Jews collectively responsible for the actions of the State of Israel. Also, denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination, e.g. by claiming that the existence of the State of Israel is a racist endeavor. Well, it is, though. I mean, it's an Ashkenazi project. The admin believes she, in fact, does understand anti-Semitism. She wrote, "Does anti-Semitism exist? Absolutely. Do people commit heinous crimes against Jewish people? Absolutely. Is it wrong, inhumane, and evil to desire to hurt one group of people because they are of a different race, religion, ethnic background, gender, etc.? Of course." But she promptly turned to another anti-Semitic trope, suggesting that Jews have been warped by their long history of persecution to become persecutors themselves. "Being a member of one oppressed group does not absolve you from accountability. The oppressed can absolutely become oppressors. There's always a hierarchy in systems of oppression."
Okay, Jews, so you believe in Freudian psychology and shit, right? That's a Jewish little thing, right? Where we sort of, everybody's familiar with, you know, the parent abuses the child and then the child becomes abusive towards their children. So what's the problem here? I mean, you the ones who came up with that, with the kind of explanatory framework, right?
Moreover, she advanced a popular but incoherent idea of the social justice movement. It's unethical and contradictory of anyone to align themselves with one fight against injustice and yet support, encourage, or ignore other acts of injustice. The admin absolved the member who asked for the pledge because she didn't place blame on anyone. She simply said if there's a Jewish admin, she hopes they will acknowledge the occupation of Palestine. In response to that one comment, all of this. And all of this meant the expulsion of several women whose income, already strained under the impact of COVID-19, was further damaged by her action, including two black women who tried to explain to the admin that anti-Semitism was anathema to the group. She threw out both a black Jewish woman who attempted to explain the Jewish point of view and a black Christian woman and an admin who objected to anti-Semitism on the site. But no one who expressed anti-Semitic views was expelled.
Dare I say this is our secret girls Facebook group?
Yeah, are we sure the G in there stands for girls? Is it like Goy's Night Out? Have they had a rebranding maybe?
Definitely was upsetting, said 130-something woman who was booted. Obviously, when you see anti-Semitism, it's hard. But I've never had it blatantly directed against me. And when that happened, and I was excised from a place just for standing up for Jews, I thought, oh my gosh, it was eye-opening. With the absolute power she seized and zealously guarded, members say a group as large as GNO needs 5 to 10 admins and moderators to properly handle all the posts. I love that! The woman who founded this group seized absolute power, zealously guarded it, because the group's just too large. You need people to help you run it. Amazing.
We need to pack the court. We need a critarchy of admins on this ASAP.
You can't run your country by yourself. You need us. You need help. With the absolute power she seized and zealously guarded, members say a group as large as GNO needs 5 to 10 admins and moderators to properly handle all the posts. The admin had her way, and she reveled in her accomplishment. A few weeks later, she tweeted, hashtag PSA, the only people complaining about hashtag cancel culture are the white people whose bullshit is no longer being tolerated. Keep calling them out. The rules of GNO are explained in the About section of the group. Please be kind, directed the founder, who has since become disappointed with GNO, according to current members. Oh, there was an actual coup, apparently. I was wrong. So the founder the founder's no longer in charge of it. It sounds like some kind of POZ woman managed to actually pull off a coup. Now I'm kind of curious about who I got Twitter. Let's see here. If she tweeted this out, I should be able to figure out who did this. Let me see if I can find it very quickly here. Here it is.
Does it link to Stryker's Twitter account or what?
Ashley Haynes. Yeah, it's take a guess what she looks like.
I guess she has a small nose and nice, lush, kind of long, wavy hair.
No, I'm actually impressed that a black woman was able to successfully pull off a coup. Anyways. The rules of GNO are explained in the About section of the group. Please be kind, directed the founder, who has since become disappointed with GNO, according to current members. Please be respectful, open-minded, and supportive when posting. This is a safe and pro-female space. Among other things, what is not allowed? Racial slurs or other racial remarks or actions, no matter what your race is. Members are also asked to keep the group's posts private. The woman who forwarded relevant posts to Tablet did so because they felt their sudden expulsion had broken the rules of the group, as well as Facebook's own community standards. Expression that threatens people has the potential to intimidate, exclude, or silence others, and isn't allowed on Facebook. Not to mention real exclusion from the virtual public spaces whose civic importance Mark Zuckerberg likes to praise. Since the regime change, all views on GNO that conflict with those of the single admin have been silenced. Even those who were kicked out of GNO are afraid to speak because they don't want to be doxxed or have an army of Facebook and Twitter warriors sending petitions to their employers. Others say they can't afford the chance that the admin will use her power to badmouth them to 30,000 remaining members. Tablet has chosen not to publish the name of the admin responsible for the actions that led to the story, though her identity is known to every member of GNO. Zuckerberg believes the future of Facebook lies in private groups. Privacy gives people the freedom to be themselves and connect more naturally, he said in a statement. But what if being themselves is hateful to others? It wasn't until last month, October 2020, that Facebook updated its rules to ban content that denies or distorts the Holocaust, prompting a headline in Time magazine to read, Critics ask what took them so long. The GNO story took 3 months to play itself out. In late August, at the beginning of the discussion about adding a Jewish admin, a young woman enthusiastically offered her services. She said she, too, had encountered anti-Semitism. I was with friends, and they said, don't you think anti-Semitism is warranted, and can't you understand their feelings given what Israel does? She was upset. Yes, I do think so. She was upset. Like, excuse me, she wrote, I turned down Birthright, and I've never been to Israel. She defined herself as a good Jew, one who disapproved of Israel. She made clear views about the Jewish state in a post in the middle of the brouhaha. Being for settlements on Palestinian land is absolute colonizer behavior, and it is imperialistic. And so on September 9th, she was chosen to be a moderator. Another member objected to this woman's selection, posting to the group, 95% of Jews in America support Israel's existence, and I would rather have someone who represents the Jewish majority to be an admin rather than someone on the fringe who doesn't recognize a majority of Jewish issues. I sure don't support the government, but I'm not comfortable with an anti-Zionist as the Jewish representative of the group. What? The objector was expelled. By October 28th, the new moderator had given up her post, claiming the job was stressing her out. On the night of...
Cognitive dissonance. Oh, that's... of course, she's... Then she's, like, actually coming face-to-face. It's one thing to be an optics kayak in this kind of environment where it's like, yes, I'm against oppression, and I think Israel is a colonizer state. And then, but then you get these, like, you know, blacks and whatever who are just kind of doing all the posting, and she's like getting you can just easily see her getting increasingly uncomfortable with the cognitive dissonance that it's inducing. Yeah, I don't blame her.
No shit's got, like, gradually, I like totally began to hate them, okay? On the night of November 29th, the GNO founder, it finally responding to the many messages sent her way by members and former members warning her of trouble in the group she had founded nearly a decade earlier, reasserted her authority. She asked the single admin to step down, then cut her power by downgrading her to moderator and began an investigation. She readmitted all the Jewish women who had been expelled and named three Jewish Israel-supporting women of color, including Skylar Cutler, as moderators. Oh, a Jew coup. the admin reacted by leaving the group with a cadre of her followers. They released a statement saying they felt their efforts as women of color had not been valued, even after they had invested months trying to write GNO on our own. They urged women who appreciated the culture we had tried to create to follow them to a new Facebook group, LA Femme. If we have learned anything from 2020, they wrote, it's to know your worth. The former admin has been permanently banned from GNO. Cutler is satisfied with the outcome. Although anti-Semitism is still present on the site, she says, there's now Jewish representation to help moderate healthy conversations and discussions. And she has found new work, building coalitions between Jews and Asians for the group Democrats for Israel.
Dude, so what we're witnessing here is a two Facebook group solution. Is that what we're witnessing, like, in real time?
Oh, that's so good. Okay, we'll have to... that's another great possible show title. Anyway.
Jewish people... what, Democrats for Israel?
No, two Facebook groups solution.
Oh, two Facebook... we might have to go with that one. Jewish people make up just 2% of the U.S. population, and we can't fight this fight alone, she said. We need allies. Her determination to fight anti-Semitism in progressive spaces has been emboldened. We shouldn't have to hide ourselves. We shouldn't be attacked and discriminated against for being Jewish.
I just have one thing to say. I mean, apart from obviously, you know, like healthy conversations means like no allow, you know, obviously we all get the shot here, right? And the fact that quote unquote anti-Semitism is present on the site is intolerable to them. And the fact, you know, as long as there's anywhere that they do not exert absolute veto power over anything that's said, it's intolerable to them. We all get all that. I just want to say, you know, you shouldn't be attacked and discriminated against for being Jewish. You think getting snippy comments in a Facebook group is being attacked and discriminated against for being Jewish? Just wait. Just wait.
That's amazing. So they once again, they flex their power to get the founder of the group to remove the mod and to, and not only reinstate the former members of May, but add more Jewish. There are now more Jewish moderators than there ever were in that site's history, in that group's history.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't understand. Did she say at one point she got rid of all the other? She was the only admin moderator. It's her, and then literally every other moderator is Jewish, as far as I can tell from this article.
So you had this Ashley Haynes, who she basically staged her own coup where she removed all the other admins and moderators, so she was the sole power at that site. The Jews complained to the founder of the Facebook group, who was basically had gone hands off, and was and this woman basically came in, removed Haynes. So let me read this again. She asked the single admin to step down, which means like they basically forced her out. Then cut her power by downgrading her to moderator and began an investigation. And then she readmitted all the Jewish women who had been expelled and named three Jewish Israel supporting women of color, including Skylar Cutler, as moderators.
I see. So there was literally all of the moderation team, at least as of that moment, until they added more, are Jews.
Yes.
Amazing.
Amazing. Amazing story.
Electric Boogaloo Jew. Come on, guy.
Yeah, it's the lie of omission.
I didn't even read the story when I picked it out. I just read the first paragraph and I thought, this is going to be a good one. And I skimmed around. I didn't even realize what happened in this. That was just an amazing story right there.
What I'm imagining, too, when they made that Splinter Facebook group, is that the statement they released, I have it on good authority that the title of that statement was called On the Admins and Their Lies.
Ted Doshed's got another one. Sweetie, the Jew is like totally immunized against all danger. You can literally call them trashy, fat, a hoe. It runs off them like water.
not bad. All right, well, I was gonna say the because I do know some of us do have some hard time deadlines that we've got to meet up against, so you know, I think we've milked that lol cow dry, and those udders are starting to get chafed, but yeah, if we want to wrap it on up.
One more thing, Ted Noshed, just also point out Ashley Haynes, A-H.
Based? Question mark?
Oh man, it's all coming together. You know, cue the picture right from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where he's got all the red strings going on the billboard, or I'm sorry, on the chalkboard. But yeah, you know, just to kind of put a bow on it, and I may take a look. I may try to see if we can't get some fellas in that GNO group sooner rather than later. It sounds like it's fun to watch. But
pretty Jewed up, I think, now.
You know, just to eat the popcorn and you know, witness the fireworks. But yeah, you know, to put a bow on it, Borders, what you got for us, man? Anything you want to pimp out or shill?
Only thing I have to plug is if you haven't, get behind the paywall and listen to the deep dive we did on Benjamin Franklin on FTN. I have nothing else to plug because I'm working on my book right now.
All right. Awesome. And DK, what you got for us, brother? What do you want to pimp?
I have been lazy. We have recorded back several episodes of the National Institute for Gamer Review. They will be releasing soon. I've just been busy with other stuff, but now my schedule's clear and you look for those soon.
I got you. And where can the audience find them?
Right now on my YouTube channel, we have an RSS. I'll put the RSS. I'll give you the RSS. Yeah.
All right. Sounds perfect. And lastly, Ginger, you know, could you remind us again, you know, where we can find your book?
Yeah, my book is J-I-N-J-E-R, Zilla, Z-I-L-L-A, all one word, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. There's a hardcover and a softcover. And I just saw this. I just want to ask you guys, have you guys heard about these Bug Blacks?
Bro, they're all over Williamsburg. They're wearing Marvel shirts and wearing IPA. They're drinking IPAs.
They're eating artisanal mac and cheese, and like I don't know what to do with them.
I've got a few ideas. Oof. All right, and then lastly, you know, nothing I want to pimp other than just you know, go to church, y'all. So Frank, let's play it on out, and you know, just remember, y'all, the real ethno state was the friends that we made along the way. We'll be right back.